I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the Citadel. Don't tell the other podcasts. I should go.
Is it any wonder why we're still going on
and on and on?
Does anybody ever ask what happened to that one winter?
Hi, you're listening to Talking Like a Teen, a podcast where we have a tendency to rush back into our past. I am the catalog of riffs. And you are?
I am the lightning bolt on the guitar strap of Rivers Cuomo on the Green Album cover.
Yeah, side note, we could do a whole podcast about just the fashion that happens on the cover of the Green Album.
You know what? We can just get into some of that. Talking with you, I'm Adrian. So real quick, part two of our, well, at first it was going to be what is up with Rivers Cuomo, which it still is. We're doing kind of a deep dive on some Weezer shit, but we're starting at the Green Album, which is kind of where most of all this fun in finger quotes starts. So we need to talk about this cover real quick. The more I looked at it, the more I'm like, I have not looked at this cover in forever. Actually, before we even get into the cover, did you buy this album when it came out? Or I know you said you got into Weezer a little bit later, but I wasn't sure if this was one that you were like waiting for in any capacity.
Nope. I'm going to confess to a crime here. I don't think I paid for this album. I think this was one I downloaded. I downloaded it a little bit later.
Oh, I thought you like boosted the CD or something. She's like, fuck these guys, I'm stealing this.
Sidebar. My stepdad is a big ebook guy, and he has a place where he goes to find certain ebooks and he calls it the sidewalk. So I think this was an album I found on the sidewalk.
Okay. This was this is so dorky. So this is what? 2001, like spring, early summer 2001. This was the first ever album and honestly the last album I ever pre-ordered.
Aw. I love that. That's so cute.
Because like I said in the first episode, part one, I was a huge Weezer fan. One of the greatest memories ever was being sick with like the flu. A lot of my great listening experiences I realized in talking on this show is when I have the flu. But anyway, was dead sick. I borrowed my best friend at the time's copy of the Blue Album and just looped that while playing Ocarina of Time. It was like everything to me. And then eventually got to Pinkerton and that was also crazy, but did love that album. Mm-hmm. Then they break up. So when word got out that Weezer was coming back, I'm like, I need this. And I pre-ordered it at a Sam Goody. Ask
Not Samuel Goody.
Ask your parents about Sam Goody if you are of an age. I bought this with my money. And while I was there, I'm like, ooh, Newfound Glory. I forgot they had an album out. So I bought this and the self-titled Newfound Glory album the same day.
Dang.
Newfound Glory didn't get listened to for like another like 3 months, honestly, because I was all about this album. And because it's only like 28 minutes long, I just looped it and looped it and looped it.
Meanwhile, I'm sitting over here like, maybe we could talk about that Newfound Glory album at some point.
But remember I was telling you before about the whole like I would always buy two albums and one was like the need to have and the other was just kind of this random one. Mm-hmm. And that random one would always stick. Yeah, needless to say, Newfound Glory became like entirely my shit. But for a solid 3 months that summer, Weezer was it. Now they don't look like the awkward dudes on the Blue Album. Now they're here. They're making a statement. And we get Island in the Sun.
They got a haircut and their girlfriends took them to Kohl's. Come on now. You can't tell me those black sweaters don't look like my girlfriend took me to Kohl's energy.
Not gonna lie though, the first thing about this album that's always stark to me is just not seeing Matt Sharp.
Yeah.
And that'll always just sit weird with me, but rest in peace, Mikey Welsh. But not gonna lie, I fuck with Mikey's fit on this album cover.
Yeah.
He got that shit on.
And in watching a few interviews, that was kind of his whole vibe. Dude was fashionable as fuck. Love that.
Meanwhile, Pat, I'm like, dude, we had a vibe going here. You fucked it up.
His girlfriend didn't take him to Kohl's. Took him to JCPenney. It's different.
And, Because Pat always just had the energy in Weezer of, like, that's just a dad that's just dropping his kids off at, like, rock and roll camp and whatever.
I read a quote from him around this time being like, yeah, I wouldn't do Weezer if it didn't make me a lot of money. So, and I'm like, you kind of get that vibe from him at various points.
Yeah, and that's fair.
I mean, I get it. We all work jobs for the paycheck, so.
It's not like you're a YouTuber who's doing like a sponsored video knowing full well that your audience knows you don't play this type of game, but obviously you're just, the bag was nice. And there's no shade in that. But it's another thing to be in the band for damn near most of your life. At that point, I'm like, if you were going to leave, maybe do? I don't know. Like,
well, okay, to be fair, that quote happened in like 1999, 2000, when Weezer as a band was not in a good place. I can't speak to whether or not he still feels that way 25 years later.
I know we just had got finished saying in the last one that Rivers is trying to get back on top after supposedly shitting the bed with Pinkerton. I guess if I thought about it more objectively, this should feel a little more gross than it originally came off. Because here it just seemed like, okay, we're just doing a, you know, a little bit of resurgence. But, you know, you're doing a color motif again. Mm-hmm. You're doing kind of like a similar stance to your first album. You even got Rick Ocasek to produce it again. And you got, I believe it was like Tom Lordahl, who has done stuff for like Dave Matthews Band, Blink-182, Avril Lavigne, Sum 41, Newfound Glory, Story of the Year. Like, you know, he's doing a lot of like pop punk, pop rock kind of shit. Everything here just screams reboot before reboot became a dirty word.
Right. Did you hear of some of the people that they went to produce this record before they got back to Rick?
No.
They talked to Butch Vig, which, like, holy shit. But Butch was busy doing garbage. They talked to, what's that dude's name? Jeremy, what's his face? The guy that produced Enemy of the State.
Jerry Finn.
Yeah. They talked to him. They talked to a couple of punk guys that I recognize the name, but they fell out of my head. Those are the two main ones that I was like, man, especially like, yes, I know Butch Vig and I love Butch Vig from Garbage, but like, this is a guy that's production royalty.
Mm-hmm.
He's worked with so many groups and made so many like groundbreaking albums with different bands. Like, what? It's making my brain short circuit trying to figure out, like, what does a Butch Vig produced Green album sound like?
Actually, real quick, for anyone who's not familiar, I'm just going to pull up just a few albums he's produced.
Give him the deets. Leave off that Green Day album, because that's one of the biggest disappointments in...
Hey. It is pretty... Okay, you're not wrong, but still.
All I know is I was told that Butch Vig was producing a Green Day album and I was fucking hype on it. And then that album came out and did not live up to expectations.
Starting with the 90s off rip, you know, you got Gish by the Smashing Pumpkins. You have Nirvana's Nevermind. You have Bricks Are Heavy by L7, which is an amazing album.
Yes.
Pick Up Heaven by Drain, another good album. Dirty by Sonic Youth. Siamese Dream, fucking Sing the Sorrow by AFI.
Well, and not to mention the Garbage stuff.
Right, because that's right, he did produce that as well. Like, the dude's a monster. Now, do I think that a Butch Vig Weezer album would have been bad? No, actually not really. I think if nothing else, they would have sounded good at least. You know what I mean?
I wonder if Butch did the Green album, I think... the difference between Pinkerton and the Green Album would be a little bit less.
Yeah, and I guess that's it, though, because Butch Vig, while a good producer, Rick Ocasek pretty much built several of the foundations of power pop, you know? Like, the Cars alone, massive anthemic shit, so it makes sense from a strategic standpoint, but I'm not gonna lie, it would have been cool to see them just even just lay down a track to see, like, what would a Weezer sounded like with their tutelage or whatever.
Yeah. And this is not me talking shit on Rick Ocasek at all, because, again, this is a guy that is power pop royalty and has credentials of his own right. So, because we didn't get it and we'll never know, like, it's just one of those fun things you get to think about. This is kind of not the first time that I'd heard about the way that Rivers approaches songwriting, but like learning more about it and the catalog of riffs, I'm just like, this guy's like, it's so interesting to me to use the basically what is the scientific method to approach a creative endeavor like songwriting.
It's so bizarre.
Where he like not only took into account what bits and pieces happened in what order, but like whether or not he ate that day, whether or not he drank that day, did he have water, did he go pee, like what's his emotional state, what time of day it is. Like he's tracking all these different data points along with writing all of these music pieces and trying to essentially like figure out a way to like scientific method his way into how he can best and most efficiently write the best songs. It's fucking bananas. Like, again, everybody's creative process is different. So like, I can't really talk shit, but this is just so bizarre to me because it's so not creative.
But I kind of get it, though. I don't know if it's something I personally could do or would maybe do depending on the day, but I think about every piece of, you know, whether it's a album I listened to, a movie I watched, a comic I read, or whatever the case is. And, you know, you read these things or watch these things or whatever, and you hear them and you're like, this is good to me or this is bad to me. But not really always thinking about, at least I didn't for a time, anything could have happened between when the song was written to then it was recorded, because obviously a lot of songs that are written by the time they get to the recording process could change completely.
Right.
And between mindsets and attitudes and personalities, and so many things can go into a song where like, it's hard to just think of it as, okay, this is good, this is bad, because like there's so many things that are going into it. And I guess in trying to log that, to me, and this is, oh God, I'm going to lose so many people with this. Because on paper, it almost sounds like the Mr. Beastification of songwriting, where one of the many things that's, while he himself may not necessarily be a great person, managed to figure out all the tips, tricks, and some of the stuff, dare I say, is kind of maybe feels insidious, but really got down to the minute detail of everything needs to happen for like max retention, max views, max engagement. And if you were someone who was going to go for that thing to make like the most impactful piece of content in this regard, that would be the way to do it. But most people are going to probably feel a little weird about it. And from the description you gave, and I don't know if this is true for him, but it almost feels like that of like, I'm trying to write the perfect song. So I'm literally, like you said, scientific methoding, which maybe doesn't feel genuine, but I guess when you're coming off of Pinkerton, you're very careful about what you're trying to say and what you're not trying to say.
The literal quote is, my goal was to ascertain the one method by which I could write the best songs. He also talks about studying the songs and albums of Nirvana, Oasis, and Green Day, and basically building essentially a giant like binder full of notes and analysis that he called the Encyclopedia of Pop. Again, in hopes of trying to discover a formula for writing pop songs.
Right.
The Harvard brain is very real here.
If the goal is to remove yourself from this thing that ultimately was a net negative, and obviously while the album did find new life as a cult hit on the internet, and then, you know, people who found it after the fact, it still was commercially a disaster.
Yes.
So he's really just dialing in, which makes sense to why these songs are crafted the way they are. You know, you're in and out. There's literally no filler. There's barely a solo. It's verse, chorus, verse. You're out of here. There might be a little bit of a bridge, but he trimmed out every little bit of fat that you possibly could out of a song. If you're just trying to do a proof of concept to be like, hey, we're still here, then that works. But now, 25 years removed, it feels like a weirdly not fun way to make an album in my mind. But again, that's just me as a 41-year-old who's never been a freaking music star.
To me, a creative endeavor is an expression of yourself. There's always going to be you in it. So to go about this in such a way as to remove himself entirely from the process. It sounds exhausting in a way that it is kind of needless. Like, you didn't need to do that. You think about Say It Ain't So. Like, that's a song that was a bona fide commercial success, helped propel the Blue Album farther. But, like, that's a song that is very personal to him, is about a personal experience that he lived and feelings that he felt. And so to try to do something like that again, but to remove that personal bit from it, it reads disingenuous and weird, and it kind of ends up saying more about him as a person than including these personal details did.
I guess at that point, what is the plan? Because we're always like, oh, be yourself. You know, honesty is the best policy. And this dude's put everything out, like literally dumped the whole purse. You're getting everything and more than you want to know. And I know I sound like a skipping record because I feel like I said a variation of that this whole time, but like everybody heard that. Everybody now knows about a part of your personal life. And thank God that the album didn't come out during the internet era. But granted, the thing that made the album a disaster might have actually helped him now, where, you know, it almost seems like the more infamous you are, the better off you would be. But people did not receive it well. And like, I remember even in the limited outlets that I remember reading about this album, it seemed like everybody disliked that. People just wanted Buddy Holly again. People just wanted In the Garage again. They didn't want to care about this dude's sex life. They didn't care that he potentially fell in love with a lesbian. You know what it is? This album is asking the question, does all good art need to say something? At least that's how it feels like to me.
But at the same time, like, it may not necessarily need to say something lyrically in order to say something. And listening through it today, which I hadn't listened to it in its entirety in ages, I got this image in my head of, what if the Beach Boys, but like, that crowd of kids dancing really ironically in the Simpsons episode where they're at Lollapalooza. Because it's very much this like ironic, detached sort of take on surf rock. Is that saying something? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe just the juxtaposition of those two things is very like boomer-fied Americana surf rock thing, meaning the... Again, the ironic detachment of the 90s and early 2000s, like before 9/11 kind of shit. Like, maybe that's the message? That's the thing?
You know, I guess if it was like almost a one-off, right? It makes sense why he would be more guarded on this one. I'm not even holding him to that.
Yeah.
However, what then became an issue for me, and not to kind of go too far ahead, it's just that on subsequent albums, he does almost more of the same thing where we can't tell if the person singing is meant to be Rivers Cuomo, the individual, or a character, or are these characters. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to do whatever you want, but you're right. It felt like so much of then later Weezer felt engineered to just be high on the likability scale, but you can't manufacture that. Because anytime later on when they do get good, or when individual songs, or maybe some albums are decent, it is when at least it feels like he's being genuine.
I wonder if the fact that the Green Album was as commercially and critically successful as it was, I wonder if that hadn't happened. If it got kind of similar, not similar because like the problems between the two albums are vastly different. But if it had gotten similarly panned like Pinkerton had, I wonder what lessons Rivers would have learned moving into the next album. Or if there even would have been a next album, to be fair.
Right. Oh, there's a quote here from the 2005. He says, "With Don't Let Go, I just started strumming these chords and started singing. One word came out after the other, and I had no idea what I was singing about. And then at the end, I had a full song, and I didn't even know what it's about. And there's a lot of songs I've written like that, especially on the Green Album, where I was writing them, they were coming out so fast, I had no idea what I was talking about, and then I'm surprised. Sometimes months later, I go back and really read what I was writing, and it's weird that it makes sense sometimes."
See, and to me, that reads much more like what you would expect a musician's creative process to kind of feel like, rather than cutting and pasting random bits and bobs from your Excel spreadsheet.
I don't remember exactly when the Catalog of Riffs was originally formed, but I wonder if maybe halfway through started figuring it out, because then there's another quote regarding Hashpipe, which is a song we can also talk about. Hell, that might have to wait till part three. But it just feels like, at least in the sound bites I had grabbed, it seems like a lot of it is not bullshitting, but definitely doesn't seem as precious about it. And maybe that was sort of the play. Hell, that might be Weezer's whole play altogether. Because, you know me, I'm always torn between the unexamined life is not worth living, and also it's not that deep. Sometimes you just gotta enjoy shit for what it is.
Yeah, sometimes a rock is just a rock.
Yeah, but sometimes the rock also needs to not make certain songs. And not Dwayne Johnson, I mean. Oh God, that's a jump scare.
There's also something to be said about the fact that lyrics don't necessarily have to mean anything. It's the black hole sun, I want it that way kind of thing, where like the lyrics themselves don't necessarily have to mean anything. It just sounds cool.
Maybe that's just it. The genie's out of the bottle. When we got Pinkerton, now it's just weird to just not know much of anything and to just be here for vibes.
Well, and like, after someone has dumped their purse out in that way, to then kind of continue on afterwards, there is a little bit of awkwardness there.
Right.
Where, like, I know more about this person than maybe I intended to, and I feel a little strange about it, especially when the things we're being told are not like, my favorite movie's Independence Day, my favorite color's green. It's like, I have a thing for Asian girls and also lesbians and whatnot.
Hey, be like that sometimes.
So we've kind of talked about the Green album as a whole. So I guess next time we'll get into some of the more granular track by track sort of things. So I guess in the meantime, do you want to tell the nice people where they can find us online?
TLATpodcast.com is our website. You can find our episode archives there. Also, our social media handles are there. We're on Blue Sky and Instagram at TLAT Podcast. Check us out there. We're also on YouTube now. By the time this episode drops, we have been slowly drip feeding our episode archives onto YouTube. So you'll have full episodes there, as well as some shorts from time to time. And we're really trying to get that built up, and it's been fun learning that a lot. So anybody who wants to listen to us, check out our YouTube. And please like and subscribe and hit the bell icon to join our notification special forces.
You're damn right.
Yvonnette Niage and all that. We do have an email, TLATpodcast@gmail.com. Do you have any fun Weezer stories? What's your favorite Weezer album? Is there one you would even like us to cover on a future episode or something? Especially one of the weird ones. You know what I mean? Like, give me something post-make-believe. I don't even know what Pacific Daydream is, but I'll definitely talk about it if you guys want to hear that shit. I'm now down this rabbit hole. I may have been Cuomo's pilled. I'm so sorry.
What color pill is that?
Blue, green, red, white, black. There was a teal. It was really hard to swallow, but, you know.
Like those Advil liquid gels. It's that color. Oh goodness.
Do you have any sage advice for the folks at home?
Don't get swallowed by a whale, but if you accidentally get swallowed by a whale, don't let go of its teeth, otherwise you'll end up in its belly.